Why, hello there, priests. You have found the hardest book review podcast there is, where we digest life-changing books, we shit out greatness, and we change our lives one book at a time. Are you ready? Are you ready? Are you ready? Let's go. And here we go. Welcome back. This is Troy Hollings with a Curiously Disagreeable podcast. This is episode 2 of Effective Selling Through Psychology, the most arcane and boring book, but boring in the way that drilling wrestling takedowns is boring. But then you actually get the benefit of you can double leg somebody on concrete. We talked about an introduction to this shit, how people skills can be learned, how there's 4 main skills that overlay all of this. We talked about sizing up skills. You know, everybody has different behaviors that they exhibit, both buyer and seller. And the knowledge, the ability to interact differently with different people, that's the goddamn holy grail. But now, he's going to quickly walk through the steps of a sale. And it's important to understand this because, like, everybody thinks that sales is like when you go to Walmart and the person's just like, who's your cell phone carrier? You're like, fuck, I know if I answer them, shit's going to get bad. They're going to start presenting at me. And so the process, the sales process, is like Mahan had his order methodology. The Sandler method has upfront contract, bonding and rapport, upfront contract, pain, money, decision, then you present. So the thought is you have to do a bunch of stuff. You have to figure out actually what are the issues before you present. And so he's going to talk about that. Let's fucking go. We've referred several times to the 5 steps of a sale. In this chapter, we'll take a closer look at them because they're the framework, the skeleton of Q4 selling. The 5 steps of the sale are actually a special version of the 5 steps to successful interactions, no matter the purpose. Step 1, opening. So this is where, you know, like Sandler actually has 2 steps in this, which is bonding and rapport. So, you know, do some small talk like, oh, that's cool artwork in the background. Upfront contract, which is like, hey, okay, so if I could just throw out, like, I just want to make sure that we're both on the same page. You know, do you still have 35 minutes set aside for this? Yes. Okay, well, my goal here is I'd love to tell you a little bit about what I do, learn more about what you do, and at the end of this, if it makes sense to talk further, great, and if not, all good. Does that work for you? Anything you would add? So Sandler really, like, fleshed that opening part out. He's just saying, open. Great. Next is exploring customer needs. So this is where it's like the doctor's example. You know, it's like you don't just say, I got a deal for you. Knee surgery. Come here, little buddy. Fucking time for knee surgery. You're like, but dude, I'm an amputee. I don't have knees. So exploring customer needs is like, so it sounds like your knee hurts. Can you tell me about that? Does it hurt when you turn your foot out? When you turn your foot in? When you put your foot up? You know, it's exploring those needs. Then presenting the product or service. This is, okay, hey, based on what I understand, you need knee surgery. Here's the 2 ways we can do it. I think we should do this. What do you think? The 4th step that he lays out is managing objections. And then the 5th step is closing. Now, I will be honest. A lot of sales training has gotten away from managing objections and closing because part of it is everybody wants to have their own cool little spin on this. And I honestly do think being able to manage objections and being able to close is important. However, I definitely agree with the thought process that if you are having to hardcore close your deals or hardcore manage objections, that means that you did a shitty job of exploring customer needs. You know, if you just come up to someone and you're like, nah, I got a deal for you. You need chiropractic. They're like, no, I don't. You're like, well, why do you say that? Like, well, my back doesn't hurt. Like, oh, that's the thing. Like, chiropractic helps autism too. You're like, well, you're retarded. And then, you know, like you lose the sale. But if you'd taken the time, if you'd gone slow to go fast, you wouldn't have that many objections. So he's going to talk about objections. I actually think this is good. In my view, we have to be open to the way. And so just in general, we need to do a great job of the pain step. We need to understand their budget, their decision-making process. But if there's helpful shit here in managing objections and closing fucking deals, I'm in. And he says, while this is mostly geared towards selling, this basic format can be applied to any kinds of interactions between two people. And he's like, well, this is super cool, but who fucking cares? That's basically what he says. He's like, wouldn't each type, so each behavior type, go through all these steps? Why are we all, you know, hard for Q4 selling? And he's like, the other types skip the steps. So if those are the sales process steps, the Q1 skips understanding the client. You know, Q1 roofing sales guy comes and sees old roof, need new roof. Haha, I've got a deal for you. I'm going to give you a roof. Or like, that's like legitimately all the discovery that he does. The Q3 and the Q2, so the chatty Cathy and the one who's like super risk averse, as a sales rep, they actually skip steps too. Maybe they do a good job of opening. Maybe they do a good job of exploring the needs. Maybe they even do a good job of presenting. But then the first time the client's like, yeah, you know, I'm just not sure. They're like, okay, well, let me know. And so only the Q4 does all of those steps, and he's going to walk us through the model of what right looks like. So opening the sale. A Q4 opening does 5 things. It sets the tone of your call. It explains why you're there. It piques the customer's interest. It gets the customer involved. It makes sure the customer is ready to go ahead. All this takes special skills. You can't set the right tone if you don't know what's right for this customer. Should you spend a minute on small talk, or should you get down to business, or should you spend 10 minutes? Setting the tone is using sizing up skills we talked about. If you can't effectively pique their interest, you can't get this moving to next steps. And so the DIS profile is related to this, but different, where it's like DISC, so dominant, chatty Cathy, safety, and then like, I love numbers. And so how you bond with each of those types of people is different. You know, if you have like a super hardcore executive and you're like, so how was your weekend? He's like, good. Okay, let's get into this. You're like, did you do anything fun? He's like, yeah, I did. Okay, so I'd love to see your proposal. You're like, well, what type of fun stuff? He might stab you. And so the way you bond actually with a D is you don't do any bonding. They're like, hell yeah, I finally found someone else who's efficient. And so same concept, a Q4 sales presentation, sales process starts with an open that is relevant to this specific customer. If they are a Q3 and they really, really want to talk and they need to know that you love them, you talk about their kids and you love them. If they're a Q1 and they're hyper direct, you try to offset the upcoming war, but you get right down to business. So step one, opening. Step two, exploring the customer's needs. So this is where a good Q4 sales process uncovers the customer's tangible needs, the ones that might be satisfied by your product or service. It also uncovers the prospect's intangible needs, the ones that can be satisfied by the way you handle the sales call and present your product or service. So we'll talk about this a bunch, but like, dude, so fucking complete. So he lays out you can think about it almost as a lock. And so the key to the buying process of getting anybody to buy is that 3 things have to be 10 out of 10, or at least pretty high out of 10. 1 is the tangible needs of the customer. So the tangible needs are like, I need a new roof. Okay. And so you got to understand, like, what are those tangible needs? Are you going to sell your house in a month? Are you going to live here for 50 years? Do you care about durability? What happens if, you know, like, if you were to have a leak in 7 years and it was 10 grand to fix it? How do you feel about that? I'm not saying what happened, but I want to understand, are you okay accepting the budget option, or do you need a larger option? So that's the tangible needs. That's the, like, I need a car. Oh, what are the things you need in a car? But then intangible needs, and this is where, you know, we're still in step two, we're exploring the needs. This is where the second thing is intangible needs that need to be satisfied before somebody can buy. But there's two types of intangible needs. One is the intangible needs that get satisfied by your product. The other is the intangible needs that get satisfied by how you sell. So like a sports car, we'll say, so an intangible need. So a tangible need would be, I need a car. Great, check that off. Okay, here's five ones that meet your tangible need. Intangible need would be, I want to look like a fucking badass, and I want to drive down the neighborhood street and have everybody know that I'm rich and I'm better than them. Like, very Q1 outlook as a buyer. And so that intangible need can be met by two things. One can be met by your product. So like baked into your product, you know, let's say you're selling a red convertible. Baked into that satisfies some of those intangible needs for that person. They can picture themselves like, fuck yeah, this is wrong. Like, everybody will just know how rich I am. This is cool. But then the second of three that has to be satisfied is how you take this customer through the sales process also can and probably must satisfy their intangible needs. So, you know, their tangible need is they need a car. Part of their intangible needs are satisfied by your product, which is they also kind of want to just let everybody know that they're king. But then the third thing is that in the sales process, especially let's say if that's, you know, they're exhibiting Q1 behavior, they have to feel respected. They have to be treated in a way that someone who views themselves as a king would be okay with. And so the step two of the sales process, you got to like dig into all of that shit. Imagine if you don't, you're like, I got a knee surgery for you. And so that's step two. Step three, after you've done all of that, is presenting. A Q4 presentation does two things. It proves to the customer that their tangible and intangible needs will be better off if they buy your product. And it does that in a way that gratifies his intangible need here and now during the sales call. And so that's what I was just talking about before, where, you know, step two, you got to really, really figure out like, okay, what are your tangible needs? Okay, you need a car and it needs to do these three things. What are your intangible? Okay, you're a sociopath. Got it. And then like when you present, you have to satisfy that. So it's like, okay, you know, my car does these three things and you're a sociopath. So like, this will allow you to kill a lot of people. And then everyone's like, oh, I like this. And then they buy. Great. He's adding a fourth step, which is managing objections. A Q4 will acknowledge the objection, candidly admit that the customer is not convinced, and then dig in until they understand the real issue and then answer the objection. They will get the customer to then confirm that the objection is handled. And so this probably presupposes a little bit of like knowing anything about sales, where there are these objection handling meme plexes, if we're using a Richard Dawkins term, just like scripts and word tracks that some sales trainers really, really believe. Someone gives you an objection, you say, well, man, that the last thing that we would want is for you to feel like that. Let me tell you, other people have had a similar thing, but what they found is this. And so he's putting a little bit of a different spin on that, but he still has the same like concept where you get an objection, you got to acknowledge it. So basically we're like, sounds like we're off base. You got to dig in. You mind if I ask you just a couple questions to make sure I'm really understanding? You got to actually understand. Then you have to answer it. They'd be like, okay, so based on that, are we good? Does that make sense? Are you okay on that? So step four, managing objections. And then step five is closing. And so again, it's a little bit old school. This was written in 1982, but I'm open to the goddamn way. He says, bitch, don't listen to people who say you aren't going to have to close the deal. You have to close it. Just don't suck. Okay. A Q4 close does four things. It restates the reason to buy and the ways in which the product or service will make the customer better off. It asks for commitment and it defines commitment, and then it pins down next steps. So again, got to know about sales a little bit, but there's a concept where you got to ask for the order. And it's this weird thing where like, I'll give you an example. I don't really get flu shots, not because I don't believe in them, but because it's like, what's the worst outcome? Like, unlikely I'm going to get the flu. If I do get the flu, it's the flu. Like, oh, I got the flu. It's fine. But I was walking by the elevator one time, and this like healthcare lady at my old company came up and was like, can I put you down for a flu shot? And I was like, yes. Why did I say yes? Well, because she asked for the order. And so there's some sales trainers that think, like, don't ever even ask for the order. And there's some validity to that. Like, if you do a really, really good job on all the other stuff, like, asking for the order is slightly phony sometimes. You know, you want to cultivate the attitude of, like, I'm a guy, you're a guy. We're just two fucking dudes, okay? So on one end, there's some people who say, like, don't ask for the order, don't close at all. And there's some validity to that, but I think, like, do a really good job in the other stuff, but then maybe it sounds like closing actually is real. What he's saying is close, but don't suck. And then there's whole sales trainers who have, like, devoted almost in, like, a freestyle rap or, like, a stand-up comedy sort of way, like, devoted huge amounts of time to memorizing closes. So, you know, I'll give you a couple. Sounds like this makes sense. You know, I'm happy to write up the paperwork. When would you want to get started? Monday or Wednesday? Alternative of choice close. Take the puppy home close. Hey, so sounds like you really like this, but I get it, man. You got to kind of like see this in your own environment. How about this? Like, you know, you like the puppy in the store, but how about you take the puppy home? You know, play with it, introduce it to your kids, and then like if you don't like it, just bring the puppy back. Whoever brings the puppy back? Fucking nobody. The Benjamin Franklin close. You know, I'm a fan of one of the wisest American men, Benjamin Franklin. And you know, when old Ben, he was trying to think through a decision like this, what he would do is he would make a column. And on one side, it'd be the pros, and on the one side, it'd be the cons. And so, let's talk about that. And then you help them do the pros. So like you lead the witness. And so you have like 10 pros and then the cons, you're like quiet and somewhat like mind fuck them. And so you're like, what will be some of the cons? And then they're like, ah, I don't know what to do. And then you pressure them into signing. If you can indulge me, never mind. I can't share it. Okay. Maybe hold on. I'm going to think about it. I'm going to do it. You know, gotta live once. This might be the last episode, last series. I have a troubled friend, super cool, like him a lot, one of my deep fucking brothers. I every now and then get super drunk and call him and I'm like, I love you, I would die for you. And I could probably do agree with that, but like I prefer not to die. But he's a super great guy, but somewhat troubled. And so he, in my old house, I had a detached cabin. And so on Facebook, I kind of just jokingly was like, hey man, I know you're kind of struggling. Come live in my cabin. He responded, done. Immediately Greyhound bust across the country to go live in my cabin. All types of shenanigans ensued. He shit outside. My dog rolled in it. I almost got a divorce. It was super fucked up. He's hilarious, whatever. But I used the Benjamin Franklin close on him because he was trying to find a girlfriend. And so, you know, and he's got like no standards at all. And so, he was like, okay, so I'm trying to find a girlfriend. He was going on these dates, but they're all like normal. And he's not normal. You know, like you don't bring up the Illuminati on day one. And he then found this lady and her husband who were like looking for a bull, a.k.a. they were swingers, a.k.a. the husband wanted to watch my friend with his wife and video it. And so just as an agent of chaos and like not the best friend, but like he would have been fine afterwards. I was like, I'm going to close him on doing this. This will be so fun. And so I was like, hey, man, let's think about it. You know, one thing I've heard is that you know one of our founding American fathers, Benjamin Franklin, whenever he was going through a decision like this, he would kind of, you know, put up a chart and he would think about the pros and the cons. And so, you know, let's go through the pros. It would be interesting. It'd be unique. It'd probably be somewhat hot. You could talk about it. It'd be a great story. You could tell your grandkids. You're horny. You need to do this. And then on the cons, I didn't help him at all. I mean, I led him. I was like, okay, it seems like the only con is it might be a little awkward. And then he couldn't think of any other cons. We had like 15 pros, one con. And I was like, so, I mean, doesn't it feel like the pros outweigh the cons here? Turns out he ended up not doing it. And I didn't push that hard because, like, you know, somewhat immoral. But that is closing. And so Sir Lefton is saying that closing is a part of this, but he's not buying that we need to just like memorize a bunch of closing lines. And so let's look ahead. In the following chapters, we'll take a hard look at all the people skills mentioned in this one. Then we'll return to the five steps and time them and the skills together. Right now, the key point is that whenever we talk about Q4 selling, we're talking about selling that follows the five steps without omission in the order we've described. Well, fuck. I think I summarized that through the whole thing, but basically, those are the steps that you need to be thinking about. He's going to teach us about it, but before we, you know, he gave us a preview. That's his sales process. But now we're going to go into the skills. The logical way to begin a discussion on selling skills is to start, and I'm saying this, but I agree, start at first principles and explain why people buy. Once that's done, we can more easily explain the skills for getting people to buy. So a Q4 presentation does two things. It proves that the customer will be better off if they buy what you're selling because their needs, tangible and intangible, will be filled. And it does that in a way that gratifies their intangible needs here and now during the presentation. That, in a nutshell, is why people buy. And so I talked about this a little bit. He's got this like super fucking smart diagram, but you can just imagine it. Basically, imagine like a counter, like a high watermark counter, and it's tangible and intangible needs. And those tangible and intangible needs have to be above the water for the customer to buy. Tangible is just satisfied by your product. Intangible is satisfied by both your product and how you present your product. And so you can control those, but ultimately, if you don't get all of those above the water, you're not going to buy. Q4 selling is about moving down all three of those paths at the same time. The way to do that is to link the what and the how of your product to your customer's tangible and intangible needs. You need a car? I got a fucking car. Intangible needs, you're a sociopath who thinks you're a king? Think of how awesome it'll feel when all of your fucking neighbors see you in this red convertible. They'll know you're better than them. Because the tangible needs, they're objective, but the intangible ones, they're always subjective. There's something that exists in the customer's head. It's a feeling, it's an emotion, it's a frame of mind. They can be satisfied by your product or service, but also the way you interact with the prospect. So, example of this, I had a horrible back injury. It is now somewhat stable and just I'm kind of like a fucking old man now early. But I went to two different back doctors. One, I started to describe my issues. He's like, okay, great. Hey, I'm going to refer you to someone else. Thanks. And I was like, that's $1,000. I'm angry. The next back doctor, I waited like, I don't know, 9 more months. And I'm like, dude, my back is so fucked. I need another doctor. And I went to that doctor and he really listened. He's like, so tell me about this. And I told him all about it. All the things that I thought were super duper important. Like all, and I really, really reiterated like this, you know, when I do this, it hurts. When I do this, it doesn't hurt. And he listened. He asked me questions. And at the end, guess what he did? He's like, hey, I'm going to refer you to someone else. And I was like, awesome. Great. If you think about it, why was that? Well, my tangible need was my back's fucked up. My intangible need was like, I needed to believe that they knew what, you know, and my intangible need satisfied by their service was I needed to believe that they knew what they were talking about. And so I actually think the first doctor, I was like, I'm sure he's really good. I believe that. But my another intangible need was I needed to feel heard. I needed to almost like vent. And so This other doctor, the second doctor, satisfied my tangible need of my back's fucked up. Yep, he can help. And then he satisfied with his service my knowledge that, like, okay, he's pretty good. I believe that he could do a good job. But then he did what the other doctor didn't do, and he satisfied my intangible need of being listened to and taking the time. And so how I left those two encounters, even with the same exact fucking outcome, totally different. And that's why people buy. All three of those have to be satisfied. The last chapter we talked about was an insight chapter, not a skill chapter. It explained why people buy motivation, but not how to do anything. This is a skill chapter. It zeroes in on techniques for filling needs, for turning minuses into pluses, and convincing people they'll be better off if they buy. These are Q4 skills. Their object is not to pressure the customer, Q1, rely on luck, Q2, or lean on friendship. Do it for me, don't you love me? No, their object is to persuade. So he's basically just saying, like, answering the question, why do people buy? Well, people buy when all three of those things are 10 out of 10. Now we're going to talk about what are the skills to sniff out the tangible needs, to sniff out the intangible needs, and then to figure out what parts of the intangible needs have to be satisfied by your product or service, and what parts need to be satisfied by how you present your product. And so with all this, it's like fucking Buddhist magic over here. So I'm not going to go massively deep into this, but I will say, he says, like, ask questions to figure out the needs. Great. But a point I will pull out that applies here, but also applies really, like, broadly anywhere, is features versus benefits. And so, part of how we get people to understand that the product that you have satisfies their tangible and intangible needs is, features just exist in the world. So, like, let's think of a couple examples. A minivan. What are some of the features? Well, it's got a bunch of space. Okay. Well, what's the benefit? Well, if you have a big family, you don't have to take two cars. Okay. It's got really good crash test rating. That's a feature. Well, the benefit is that your kids will live if you get into a car accident. That's way more powerful. What about, like, a gun? We'll say Smith & Wesson M&P9. Feature, 17 plus 1. Benefit, if shit pops off, bro, you almost have a full rifle's worth of ammo on your hip. Feature, polymer slide, whatever that means. Benefit, it's lighter than a steel pistol, meaning you can carry it easier. Oh, okay. Feature, top reliability scores. Benefit, bro, you don't have to even be that crazy about cleaning this. It will work when you pull the trigger and you won't fucking die. And so what he's saying is that, you know, part of how we satisfy those tangible and intangible needs are by using benefit statements like that. And so, two quick examples. Let's say you're a billboard printing ink salesperson. Okay, and you go talk to somebody and they're like, yeah, you know, our billboards are taking a beating. We need ink that can stand up to the weather, or we're going to have to spend too much time resurfacing the billboards. Well, the feature of your ink, you know, is polyethylene ink, whatever the fuck that means. And so that's a feature. So you're like, well, no, I've got this special polyethylene ink. You should love it. And the customer, even though this is their tangible need, like, they don't hear you. You have to wrap it in a benefit statement. So you say, hey, so I hear what you're saying about trying to avoid resurfacing. That makes a ton of sense. That sounds so fucking annoying and painful. I will say that one of the things that makes our ink better is it's a polyethylene base, which in English, what that means is that all four seasons, you don't have to replace it. And actually, down the street, ABC Company, I did this for them 4 years ago, and they've never replaced it. Does that make sense? So that's a benefit statement on the tangible needs, but it also works on intangible. So let's say that you're picking up on someone's intangible need of, like, they're concerned about safety, and you sell security services. So you say, hey, you know, I'm picking up a little bit that, you know, it seems really important to you that, you know, people can be in here and they're not having to worry about, like, is someone to come in and rob them and put a gun in their fucking mouth? Like, is that, am I picking that up right? Like, oh my God, yeah. It's like, okay, well, hey, well, so I just want to maybe talk about that for a little bit. Like, I have, you know, everybody on our guard, detail shit. I don't know how you talk about that. You know, they are former police officers. And so they've all been trained at the police academy. And so I don't even want to say this, but, you know, this is the world we live in. I will even say that they've all gone through active shooter training. So worst comes to worst, you have an active shooter, I'm confident, and I bet my life that our guards will put them down. And so that's like a benefit statement. You know, the feature was they have police training. The benefit is if an active shooter comes, you're going to live. And so this is actually one of those ideas that if you can meditate on for 100 years, you will reach enlightenment, features versus benefits. But just throwing that out there because that's so critical. But he's saying how we go fill those tangible and intangible needs, you know, and we're still like doing it in a different way based on sizing up skills is through benefit statements. Don't sell features. Don't even sell benefits. Logically connect the benefits to the customer's tangible and intangible needs and turn that fucking key in their goddamn sales lock. And the last point that he makes is really good, which is in many cases, the ultimate net gain, net benefit, the one that finally makes your option better than any others is the salesperson. And so I'll just give an example of that. And so what he's saying is that, like, you don't have to have the absolute best product in all categories, and you probably obviously won't. You know, if you have that ink that lasts 5 years on a billboard in Minnesota, that ink's probably not going to have the other benefit of being the cheapest. So you have to figure out, like, you know, what makes yours different, what makes yours better. But even if you're selling a total commodity, which in sales parlance, you don't even believe that that could be a concept because price is never the issue. But let's even just pretend you are. One of the things that can be the ultimate net gain, the net benefit, is just how you sell. And so if I am a buyer and I'm trying to buy steel, a total fucking commodity, and I've got the same exact, maybe even government required same prices as my competitors, how do I make the decision? Well, if Troy writes them, you know, writes that guy handwritten thank you note, is predictably consistent, is adding value, is helping. Anytime that you call him, he answers the phone immediately. He jumps on it. He has urgency. That could be all you need. Like, your tangible need is satisfied by steel. Maybe even your intangible need is satisfied by the product too, of like, it's got to be durable. Okay, everybody's is durable. But your intangible need of like, fuck dude, I need to work with someone who I can trust. That could be satisfied solely and completely by how you sell. And so the point here is that, like, yes, it's helpful to sell a really good product, but even if your product isn't the market leader, you can still satisfy all three of those buckets and make them 10 out of 10 by being fucking good. And so he's walking us now through those skills to navigate through the steps. We're going through those steps. You know, the ultimate goal is achieving 10s on both tangible and intangible needs, intangible being half satisfied by your presentation, half by your product. But there's an order to things. In our last chapter, we called need benefit selling the vehicle that will move you along pathways 1 and 2 to the sale smoothly, efficiently, and surely. And I didn't talk about this, but pathways 1 and 2 is basically just saying, like, making tangible and intangible needs successful from your product. However, like any vehicle, you won't get to your destination smoothly if you use it at the wrong time. In this chapter, we will cover the when of selling, the whole question of timing. And so this is like a really fucking insane idea here. And so, you know, we have this sales process, this presentation, and, like, you know, you're doing the needs analysis, you're going through, now it gets time to present. We're saying, well, how do you know when it's right to present? You know, haven't you ever given an enthusiastic presentation and the prospect's like, they need to think about it? And so another dimension to this whole thought process is, before you can really progress down the sales process, is the customer has to be receptive. And like, what do you do if the customer isn't receptive? Can you create situations where they are? There could legitimately be nothing wrong with your presentation, but if you give it to a customer who is not receptive, it won't work. Closed minds don't consider new ideas. So think about that example that I gave some fucking time. I think first episode was when I was considering, and still am considering, hiring a sales trainer just to become the best that ever lived. But I was not very receptive. She was like, how's your personal goals? And I was like, good. And she's like, well, is it going to be a problem to talk about your personal goals? Because this is all interrelated. You know, this is like, we might end up having to go back to childhood to diagnose some of your past trauma. And I was like, I think I'm going to hang up right now. But I didn't. But I just got like super unreceptive. And I was like, hey, I'm not going to do journaling. I just like aggressively was like, I'm never going to journal. And she's like, so you don't have any negative beliefs? I'm like, no. But the problem is, if you think about this additional dimension to sales, is receptivity. So you're going through this process. You've thin sliced the people. You're figuring out what their behavior's like. But until you get somebody receptive enough, they're never going to hear your message. And so, if you're giving a presentation and your voice just sounds like the Charlie Brown teacher, then nobody's ever going to buy your shit. And so think about receptivity almost like a stamina meter in a video game. So there's a meter that's overlaying your entire sales process. And if that meter is not above 75%, we'll say, you cannot do an attack in the video game. You can't. So you have to manage stamina. And when stamina starts to drain, when receptivity starts to get low, before you can do any attacks, before you can go further in the sales process, you have to spin back up receptivity. And it is possible. And he's about to fucking lay it out. And this is the goddamn gold coming up. An unreceptive customer can be made receptive. Closed minds can be reached. Okay, so what do we do? Do we present at them really well? Like, what the fuck do we do? Turns out, we don't do anything like that. We use our probing skills, questions. And he's going to lay out the best framework for thinking about different types of questions that I've ever seen. Don't waste your breath on facts, eloquence, or logic when the customer's receptivity is low. She's like, don't you have any limiting beliefs? I was like, no. I don't know. Maybe I'm not like self-aware enough. I feel like I don't, but maybe my limiting belief is that I'm going to live to 120. I don't know. But regardless, if I'm not receptive, I cannot have an open mind. And so to spin back up that stamina meter, to get that up, the little potion we're going to take to make the stamina, make the receptivity meter up, is through probing skills, and he's about to outline that in the next chapter. Without probing skills, you may not be able to do needs benefit selling at all. So he's saying you could be seriously giving the best presentation ever, but the environment, it's almost making me think of, like I've heard that stand-up comedians, that they like a small room with a little bit too small of a space, a little bit too dark, and a little bit too much alcohol. And so you could give the best stand-up comedy. It's like when the world went to Zoom when COVID kicked off. Apparently some stand-up comedians were trying to do comedy over Zoom, and like apparently it didn't fucking work. You could be giving the best comedy, but if you're over Zoom instead of one of those like really tight red rooms of a comedy club, it's not going to be funny. Same thing. If people are not receptive, they might not even hear your message. Thus, we need to learn about probing skills, which are that potion that we can drink to make that stamina meter strong, boy. But as is tradition, as is the way, as we're going out strong, as we're going out hard, as this could be the last series I ever do, and I could be dead. If you want to learn about probing skills, about building trust, about building understanding, and then ultimately closing the fucking sale, you're going to have to tune in next time on the next episode of the Curiously Disagreeable Podcast. Thank you. Thank you very much.
And that, my pretties, is another episode down of the Curiously Disagreeable Podcast. Check us out at CuriouslyDisagreeable.com, the Troy Hollings on Instagram, or wherever the fuck you get your podcasts. The end.